This week's Tow Away has been sponsored by Family M. Wiesenfeld, Lichvod Hanasuim Shel Swuri Finneas and Esti Wiesenfeld. Ches Shvat, Wednesday the 1st of February, Rav Osher Chaim Levine, people of the book, Devorah.
Good morning everybody, a big thank you to Dudi for asking me to speak. I'd like to speak about two species, two of the physical species known to mankind, and that is women and bees. Actually, I exaggerate a little bit. Bees aren't so scary. This week's Torah, which is Parshas Shira, Oz Yashir, one of the Haftorah, usually the Haftorah is usually Me'ain of the Sedra. There's usually a parallel between what's going on in the Sedra and what the Haftorah is. The Haftorah talks about the story of Devorah, Ishes Hamaviah, and I'd like to just talk about who she was, the background to her story, the background to that period in Nach, because all of us don't know Nach very well, and give some insight as to who she was, what does it mean that she was, why is she called a bee, and various other things, and what's the parallel between her Shira and Shira of Oz Yashir. Okay, so let's give a bit of background. The period of the Sefer Shoftim talks about, it's a period of around about 350 years in Jewish history, not very well known period, after the death of Yahushua, until before the birth of Shmuel, before the kings come along. And the actual word Shofet as well has also given the Mefarshim cause for consideration or cause for thought as to what the actual term Shofet, which we understand to be a judge, means vis-à-vis the Jewish leaders. And it's more or less understood that in Lashon HaKodesh, the letters Pei and Fei, Beis and Fei are interchangeable. So rather than Shofet, you can also say, you can also be Shevet, right? Like, for example, it mentions about Yehuda, it says that Lo Yosef Shevet Mi Yehuda, so namely the scepter. The scepter is usually a tool which is a symbol of authority. So similarly also, the Shoftim at that particular period weren't kings, weren't leaders in a complete sense of the whole Jewish people. Nevertheless, they were type of administrators, people who are in charge of officials, if you want, who are appointed to look after the people. Now, we find that the Gemara of Basra characterizes the period of the Shoftim as being something considered like tohu, being something emptiness, meaning not living up to its spiritual potential. But if one looks at the whole history of the Shoftim, one notices a emerging pattern which repeats itself throughout this whole period. And that is, firstly, Klal Yisrael sin. Secondly, they're punished through a persecution, through certain foe enemy taking control over them. Then Klal Yisrael cry out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu asking for rachamim. They do teshuva. Then they're delivered by the Shofet, sometimes through miraculous ways. And finally, after the Shofet dies, guess what? We start the whole pattern again. Klal Yisrael sin again. They're punished. Then they cry out to Hashem. They do teshuva. A Shofet comes to deliver them. He dies. And the cycle repeats itself. If you want, and this is going back from my background in property, it's like if you have a leaky roof. There's two different ways of dealing with it. The first is you can try and do a patch job, which will cost you not that much. But it doesn't really address the root of the problem. So it's okay for the moment, but it's not a long-term strategy. What you really need to do is you need to try and get in a builder or somebody who knows what they're talking about and fix the issue once and for all so the matter is completely done the way it should be as well. And that was why Klal Yisrael, after the period of the Shoftim, and specifically towards the end of Sefer Shoftim, about the travesty, about the whole story about Plegish Begiva, that's why they came to Shmuel and they said, give us a king. The idea of a king is that a king is somebody who has a long-term continuity. He has a dynasty which can go from one generation to another generation, and therefore that has that's a long-term solution to dealing with it, and an ideal forum, that's what it should be. So that's a bit of background as to what period we're dealing with. The actual story of Devorah and Barak is mentioned in Sefer Shoftim, the 4th and 5th chapter, and here's the background to the story. The story was Klal Yisrael were oppressed by Yovin, Melech of Canaan, for 20 years, and he had a very fierce general called Sisra. Now, This was the era of a few Talmid Chachamim, and the pasuk says, "But Devora Eishes Neviya." Sorry, Devora Isha Neviya Eishes Lapidois. This is who she was. She was a prophetess, and she was the husband of, she was the wife of Lapidos. Chazal discussed who Lapidos was, and that's maybe a topic for another time. And it says, "V'hi shofta es Yisrael v'esahi." Now, she was the shofet, which is unusual because usually we don't usually find women in positions of authority. And the Mefarshim discuss about this idea how it could fit in terms of a halacha, and that's not our topic for today. The pasuk continues by saying, "V'hi yosheves tachas toimer devara." She sits underneath a palm, Toimer Devara. We know that the famous sefer from the Ramak is named after this, Toimer Devara. And she lives in her Ephraim. And Kal Yisrael come to Vayalehu Aleho B'lei Yisrael Mishpat. They come to her to judge, for her to sort them out. What then happens is that she calls Barak, and she tells Barak, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has told me this is what you have to do, you have to get to Har Tavor, and gather together 10,000 people. And what happens is there's a confrontation between Sisera, who is, Pasuk says, was very strong. He had a whole tank battalion, okay, in that time they're called Rechev Barzel, Ein Chariots, same idea, military warfare. And they emerge, there's a whole fight that takes place. Initially, Barak doesn't want to go by himself, so he tells Devora, "Only if you come with me, will I want to come." So she says, "Okay, that's no problem at all, but because you don't want to stand up for yourself, therefore, Kibiyad Isha Yimkar Hashem Es Sisera." HaKadosh Baruch Hu will sell over, he will deliver Sisera into the hands of a woman. And what then happens is that all of the whole of the Kanani military is completely destroyed, with one exception. Just Sisera manages to escape free. He runs away, and then Yael invites him in, and then she puts him to sleep. And then when she puts him to sleep, this is the gory bit, so don't listen if you're not interested, is she takes a peg from the, and she drums it through his temple, and that is the end of that particular story. And after that, we have the Shiras Devora. So then the pasuk then says that Vatoshar Devora Barak ben Avinayim Bayamahu Leimor, and then he has the whole beautiful Shira, Anochi Hashem, Anochi Ashira, Azama Hashem Elokei Yisrael, and that's the Shira that we have. And the different minhagim as to Advar Torah, as to our Haftorah, whether or not we actually say the story beforehand or just stick on the Shira. Now, let's ask a few questions to try and understand what's going on over here. Firstly, we know that Jewish people are big into giving names of our children based on animals. Right? Zevolf. Dov Bear, Arya Leib, just to give you a few examples. And it's not only because we expect our kids to grow up to be Tamvil Dechais, Chas V'Shalom. The idea is that there is a certain symbolism within the certain name, but if Devora, and we know that Devora means a bee, so what connection is there? Why is she considered a bee? What's the symbolism between why she is considered a bee? And also, why does the pasuk have to tell us exactly where she's sitting? I mean, it's very nice. I mean, you can say it was very sunny, so therefore she needed to require a shade. But why does it mention that she is tachas toimer devara? So Chazal say that comes to tell us that she was makbid, that there shouldn't be yichud, that she shouldn't be secluded with another man. Specifically, people come to ask her questions, and the palm tree is usually, its trunk is very, very, very tall, and therefore there wouldn't be a chashash about it. But again, there must be some symbolism as to what the Tamar is there. But what is perhaps the most major question of that here is, it is exactly, there are plenty of stories in Shoftim where also the Jewish people were delivered from their enemies. You have the story of Gidzon versus Midian. You have the story about Yiftach versus Amon. You have the story about Osniel versus Aram Naraim. Why is it specifically only when Devora and Barak are able to be victorious over Yavin and Sisera, in Yavin being the Melech of Canaan, why is it now that we need to have a Shira? Why now? What's so special about here that we require a Shira more than any other Milchama, any other battle? And the Haftorah being this being the same Haftorah as Az Yashir and it being parallel, what's also the Gemara in Megillah picks up on is that the actual way this Shira is written in the Sefer Torah is similar. It's what the Gemara puts it, it's considered like Areach al Gabe Levina. It's like a half brick upon a whole brick. So usually when you build bricks rather than doing one on top of each other, what you do is you have one in between each other so that they balance each other out, so that's much firmer as well. So similarly, that's the structure, the way this is written in the Sefer Torah. So this Shira is exactly the same as Oz Yashir. Now there's actually a few interesting other parallels between Oz Yashir and this Shira. For example, the idea is that both of them we have Paroi and his Rithbov, Paroi and his chariots chasing the Yidden, coming to and going to Yamsuf in this week's Sedra. And similarly, so you have Sisra with his 900 chariots as well. In the same way that the Egyptian chariots are overtaken by the Yamsuf, similarly also it mentions how when they were chasing, they went to Nachal Kishon, and then this was usually it was a very calm brook, and the water started bubbling, and it also managed to engulf and drown Sisra's army. And in the same way that we find that only one person escapes the Yam Suf, who was that?
Paroi.
So in the answer, we find there's only one person that escapes this whole Milchoma, and that is Sisra. So there are some interesting parallels between the two, where they're written, the idea that that's the enemy chasing and the enemy being taken over. What is the connection between these two? Okay, so I think the way to understand this is based on the concept of recognizing what is the Shira all about. So for this we have to go to the Maral. The Maral in Netzach Yisrael, Perek Mem Gimel, mentions, he contrasts the difference between mourning and joy. Usually when a person's happy, usually humming a tune, you're very happy, you're happy to...
It's a happy tune.
A happy tune, thank you. But usually... Okay, but usually otherwise if a person's in mourning, if a person's sorrowful, then you don't get that as well. And the expensive difference is that usually when a person is mourning or experiencing a loss or feeling depressed or bereaved, then he falls silent. We find that Aaron, after his two sons died, he kept silence. You're stunned. Mashenkin, when a person is happy and they're overwhelmed and they've reached a level of shlemus, level of completion, that reaches a certain state of joy, of ecstasy, because then a person then is feeling in such a state, he's happy to sing, he's happy to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu, from whom all shlemus comes from. And the idea of Shira being a state of completion is actually merumas in the actual word itself. Because the Gemara, the Mishnah, actually beginning of Bamah Behema, mentions that there is a certain ornament that was called a shayar, same letters as the word shir, which is a collar which you would put around an animal's neck, and it's a certain type of ornament. The Gemara discusses whether you can go out with this on Shabbos or not. The idea of shir is a whole circle, and that is because a circle is when you start off in a circle and you go all the way around and you come back to where you started, and there's a completion that you have. You reach a level of completion, level of shlemus. Rather than a straight line that can go on and on and on, a circle starts off at a particular point and then it reaches the level of shlemus, level of completion. And that is Shira. Shira is when you've reached the end. It's like you're hearing a shir and the baldashin's going on and on and on. You're thinking, oh, Gewalt, has he left his watch at home? And suddenly when he says, I've taken my watch with me, sorry. and then finally the baldashin says, and then you can hear the whole audience breathe a sigh of relief. And that's it, that's the end. So that is, you've got there. You've reached the level of shlemus. I've almost got there, don't worry. The idea of the symphony of song is that, and specifically as we find in this week's Sedra, the Kriyas Yamsuf, is because even though Klal Yisrael left Mitzrayim on the first day of Pesach, nevertheless, they left the Mitzrayim behind. They were always worried that perhaps the Mitzrayim would chase after them, and exactly, Hainahach, that's actually what happened. They did chase after them. Only at the Yamsuf, as the Pasuk actually says, come and see the salvation of our Kaddish Baruch Hu, And ki Hashem reisim es Mitzrayim hayoyim, as you've seen the Mitzrayim today, lo yisrael sifun reisim oit al oilam. You'll never see them again. This is the fait accompli. With this, we end. All of your taskmasters, who you always worry that maybe they might take you back, we're going to decimate them, we're going to get rid of them as well. Now is the time that you can reach a level of Shira. And that's what the Maharal says. That's why they didn't sing Shira, specifically after they left Mitzrayim. It's only after Kriyas Yamsuf, only after all the Mitzrayim were destroyed, and they knew no longer their Egyptian taskmasters had been gone, they weren't schlepping them back. That's when Shira is. Because again, there's a level of completion, everything has reached the end point. The Gemara Megillah, Daf Vav Amud Beis, says that if you want to know if you're really successful, how do you know if you're really successful? No, it doesn't mean winning the lottery. It doesn't mean speaking in the Torah way. No, that's not success. Okay, maybe not. A final stage of man's success is when all of his enemies have been destroyed. That's the level of success. This can be referring to a person's physical enemies. For example, we found Moshe Rabbeinu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, you can return to Mitzrayim because those people who were as nafshecha, those people who wanted to destroy you had were no longer alive. And therefore, that's the level of success. Either a person's physical enemies or also a person's Yetzirah. If a person's able to destroy the Yetzirah and be in control, then he knows, now he's made it. Now he can sing a song. So the idea of bursting into song, and don't worry, I won't try it on you today, is that it's the right response that a person has when you see all the pictures of the puzzle fit harmoniously together. So that was what happened when leaving Mitzrayim. Klal Yisrael entered Eretz Yisrael. And they were told, HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded them, that they had to destroy all of the people in the land. And this, unfortunately, was something which they didn't do, even though they were told to do. It's something which they, unfortunately, did not. The pasuk, for example, in Parshas Vayeshanan says, "Ki ve'acha Hashem elekecha la'aretz ha'shata abar shomer l'rishta." And HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes you into the land that He's given you. And v'noishal goyim rabim mipanecha. You should get rid of them. And who are they? Hachiti, Vagrigoshi, Vaimori, Vaknani, Vaprizi, Vachi, Vavuti, Shiva Goyim, Rabim, Batsumim, Mimeko. Get rid of the seven nations of the land. And the halacha was that was the Chaychal Nefesh, you couldn't leave anybody alive, they had to get rid of them completely at all. Did they actually succeed in doing that? And the answer is, if you look at the end of Yeshua, they didn't. Even though they managed to get rid of them, most of them, and we do find that Yeshua actually killed the 31 kings. Nevertheless, there were pockets of Canaanim who remained in the land. And the pasuk in the Chumash tells us the reason why you must get rid of them is in order to prevent yourself following their ways and doing Avodah Zarah. And Klal Yisrael left them alive, and therefore, consequently, most of the Avodahs that took place in Sefer Shoftim are all about being Avodah Zarah. They didn't listen to Moshe Rabbeinu, they didn't listen to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore the insidious influence of those inhabitants, the original inhabitants, was there, and unfortunately it had influence on Klal Yisrael. So the job wasn't complete, and in fact when Yeshua left, on Yeshua's deathbed, at the end of Sefer Yeshua, he exhorts the Jewish people, make sure you take complete control over the land, and get rid of all of the Canaan. But this melech that we have beforehand of here, of this melech of Yovim Melech Canaan, who was originally mentioned in Parshas, he's really mentioned in Sefer Yeshua, he's still around here now. It's only now that the Canaanim are destroyed. In fact, the Medrash says something amazing. It says that when Sisera went to battle against the Jewish people, in the time of Devorah, he took with him 31 kings. Why 31 kings? Because what he was trying to do was he was trying to reverse the injustice that he saw of Klal Yisrael taking control over Canaan, Eretz Canaan, and transferring it to Eretz Yisrael. Yeshua has killed the 31 kings. Therefore, he said, we're going to drive the Eden out of the Jewish people out of Eretz Canaan. We're going to reinstate it as Eretz Canaan. Therefore, I need to take with me 31 kings to reinstate that which we previously lost. And that is identical what's happening. Paro let the Jewish people out, and he now needs to, he's has harot, and he now wants to try and drive them and reverse the situation. Therefore, the Canaanim were still around. This was their last stand. And therefore, the final blow, as far as getting rid of the Canaanim is concerned, is here. Here is where the Canaanim have their last stand, their last mention. If you look through Nach after this, the Canaanim, other, the Jewish people have plenty of other enemies to deal with. But Canaan, that we don't hear of them again. That's why the Shira takes place specifically now. Because in the same way that Oz Yashir comes along to celebrate the complete Shira, the circle that takes place, the joy, because all the Egyptian taskmasters were no longer, similarly also, it's now that the Canaanim had been destroyed, now that finally Sisera had been killed, and there was no longer that threat, those 31 new kings had also been destroyed, that's now when we want to have a level of Shira. And therefore, it transfers from being Eretz Canaan to becoming Eretz Yisrael. And as the Posset mentions, how do we describe Eretz Yisrael? Eretz Yisrael is described as Eretz Zavas Cholov Udvash. Milk and honey. What are these two things together, and how do they fit in with Eretz Yisrael? Let's go back to discussing about the bee. We find a very interesting Rashi in Parshas Balak, and that is where Bilam suggests that he wants to bench the Jewish people. Akshbach says, no, Vazbechop, I'm not interested in it at all. I don't want, Klal Yisrael don't need your brachos, and they certainly don't need your klalos. And the way Rashi quotes, and it's quoted from a medrash, loy medvoshech veloy mokseich. We don't want your honey, thank you very much, and we don't want your sting either. The bee has these two characteristics. On the one hand, it has its punishing sting to its enemies. On the other hand, it produces that sweet honey. As far as Devorah is concerned, she exemplifies both these two traits. When it came to stinging, to making sure to get rid of the Canaanim, that's what she did. And in fact, it's very interesting. The Pasuk, Bashas Vayeshanan, actually mentions and discusses the Amori, who are one of the seven nations in Canaan, the description of that they are considered like the Dvorim. They're considered like the bees. She takes us against them. She stings them and she punishes them as well. But at the same time, in her victory, she also has the Dvash Cholov Tachas L'Shenech, the Pasuk in Shir HaShirim, which means that the sweet honey underneath her tongue, namely being able to say her words of Nevuah. Now, there's a fundamental difference between milk and honey. And that is, if you go through the stages of a child's life, when you have a baby, what do you feed the baby? Milk, right? Why not honey? Nah, it's not right. What's the difference between the two? Milk is effortlessly produced by the mother. And the baby, and that's what the dietary requirements for a young child. Mashenkin, honey, on the other hand, requires an extract of labor, or labor of love. You need a beekeeper, right? The honeys need to do, and they need to have a comb, and then nothing needs to be taken out, and the bee needs to get the nectar from the flowers, needs to pollinate, and then needs to bring it to the honeycomb, and then the queen bee needs to supervise everything, and ganze Geschäft. So the contrast is that milk comes free, mashenkin, dvash is something which requires effort. It requires exertion. Honey is considered the most natural, the sweetest natural occurring substance in creation. Whether it's the dvasha comes out from dates, whatever the case may be, it's something that's sweet. Milk is where you is the kindness which you have. Milk is chesed. Dvash, where you have to work for it, that's din. That's din. You have to work for it. You work for it, you get it. You don't work for it, you don't. If a child does something good, you don't say, ah, Shafer, that's amazing. I'm going to reward you. I'm going to give you a cup of milk. No. Go into the larder and see what sweet you can take. That is the sweet. Sweet is the beauty that you have as well. And in order to inherit Eretz Yisrael, you need to have both. There must be an Eretz Zobas Cholov Odvash. There needs to be the level of the Cholov, namely the effort that Akshmach gives it to you, kindness, even though we don't deserve it. And then, like the baby, and then you need to work at it and earn it yourself. Eretz Yisrael is a moshel for Olam Haba. And therefore, the idea of inheriting Eretz Yisrael is similarly to that the requirement for us to work at Olam Hazeh in order to inherit Olam Haba. In order to become a tzaddik, we need to make sure that we defeat our enemies. We need to make sure that we do what we have to do. We go full circle from taking from our potential to our actual. And that is what a tzaddik is. As the Pasuk we say, tzaddik katoma ifra. The tomar is an expression of the tzaddik. Straight, and as the Gemara says, has leib echod, ravina shel shamayim. That's something that symbolizes something that's straight. Devora, which is the bee, which is the honey aspect on it, is the effort that a person puts it, and it's a tzaddik who, through his effort in this world, he is rewarded. You don't give the tzaddik milk, you give him the honey. The honey is the sweetness that is involved in the recognition that you've done something, you've deserved it, and I'm going to reward you accordingly. And therefore, it is specifically the tzaddikim, in the same way that Moshe and Klal Yisrael defeated the Mitzrayim and they sang Oz Yashar. In the same way that Devorah and Barak defeated the Knanim, and that was the end of it in the time of in Sefer Shoftim, similarly, so it's after every single one of us to become the tzaddik, to make sure that we work upon ourselves to be zoicher, to that the we are like the Talmud which has leit echod shavim b'shabashamayim. And in order to do that, we met Hashem be zoicher that. In the same way that when it comes to Shabbos, Shabbos is the end of the week. It's when we reach the level of completion. And that's why we sing Mizmor Shirim HaShabbos. We recognize we've come, we've reached the end. That's when we, and in Mizmor Shirim HaShabbos, that's where we say Tzadik Hatama Yifrei. That's the culmination of all of our effort in this world. That's when the milk, right, becomes honey. That's when we take the sting, we use the sting in order to sting our Yetzahara, so to speak. And we make sure that we use the honey to take the fruit of our labor that we had, the sweetness that we can take for Olam Haba. And this is the recognition that that's what Shira is all about. And therefore, in the same way that Klal Yisrael sang Shira at the Yam, in the same way that Devorah sang Shira, Metzrim look forward to the future Geula, B'mherav Yomeinu, and that's when we will sing Mochel Tzadikim, B'mherav Yomeinu.